Hello, this is Nina, and we have gathered for the 16th edition of the Audible Weed Walk. Last week, we were talking about Durga Puja, the festivities across India. The puja is long over now. The story goes, Durga, after her annual visit to her home on earth, returns to her celestial abode with her children, Lakshmi, Saraswati, Kartikeya, who is known as Murugan here, and Ganesha, on the 10th day. But remember, she is worshipped in her warrior image. That signifies the constant inner battle between the good and not so good. The 10th day is the victory or the Vijaya Day, celebration for good. Found a really nice poem by somebody called Urna. I don't know if the poet is a male or a female, but since we don't know, I assign her as a female. And I'm putting up a meme in the podcast with this poem. Have a read. It really resonates with me and it's wonderful. So the poem says, the demon is always within. The goddess is always within. The battle too is always within. And so the triumph of one over the other. Which one over which one? The choice is also somehow always within. Isn't that wonderful? Okay, let's get back to the story. It goes that the godly contingent makes their way back. And Goddess Lakshmi, the goddess of well-being, who in Bengal is worshipped as Dhanya Lakshmi, the goddess of food and agricultural wealth, decides to return for a few more days of stay on earth. This year, that day is today, and she is worshipped on the full moon night of the Sharad or the Kojagiri. Kojagiri literally means the night of awakening, where the goddess goes around the households to see who is awake and waiting for her and blesses them. While the modern prasad or the food associated with this worship can be a variety, always vegetarian actually, unlike Durga, which has two strains of food culture. One is always vegetarian, the other includes the non-vegetarian food too. But for Lakshmi, Goddess Lakshmi, traditionally taro, which is Colocasia esculenta, is cooked for this festivity. And this is cooked, this could be vegetarian and cooked with dark chickpeas or with fish head. Don't get shocked. Fish heads are a delicacy for the whole of Eastern India and many other parts of the world. Another weedy green that finds its mention is water spinach or Ipomoea aquatica. This is not in the book, but I intend to include this in the next volumes for which we are doing a crowdfunding initiative. And if you would like to help, you can sign up in the form which you can find in the Facebook or in the YouTube channel. How come taro is used so much traditionally and it's packed with so much of goodness and yet seem to have taken a backseat for the benefit of, say, something like potato? Well, for the benefit of taro, please listen to the previous podcast, podcast number 15. This is actually number 2, the part 2 of the same podcast. There are 4 major cultivars of taro across the world, but the varieties, well, there are innumerable. In the tiny island of Fiji alone, it seems there are 70 plus varieties of Colocasia esculenta, and they are used slightly differently. Some are preferred for their cormlets, which we call here arbi, some for all parts, some especially for the leaves, just like here in India. You will hear the terms like dashin, yautika, edo, kalo, and they make a variety of dishes in different cultures. The varieties also comes in various colors and shapes, some with dark petiole or leafy stalk, some with thread, some with leaves that are colored or partly colored, and they also grow in a variety of weather, soil and climatic condition, from high mountain to sea level, in full or partial sun, and it's planted, and once planted, it is ready to eat in about a year. Easy to grow and propagate. Why then, I again wonder, has it been sidestepped for, say, potatoes? Well, for one, taro have high level of oxalic acid. Have you seen the raphides under a microscope? The raphides, or raphides, as it's sometimes called, are the needle-shaped crystals of calcium oxalate that occurs in clusters in the tissues of some plants, including taro. This is this could be a cool science project, actually, in school, to look at the raphides under the microscope and introduced a souring agent, say a tamarind, to see how the raphides actually melts away. You actually can see it just dissolves. So the oxalates could be dealt with, but it needs some attention. Could it be the only reason? Well, it doesn't, taro, which is actually grows quite abundantly almost in every weather condition, unlike potato, why then it is not still holds the position number one? Well, it is the modern time that created the greatest hurdle for taro. Taro's best eaten fresh. Even the corm and the cormlets, we call arbi, does not have a very long shelf life. Modern groceries are driven by what packs better, what travels better, what stays in the cold storage or in the shelf for long. Think about it. Our bottle gourds are not the round bottle shaped anymore. They are long and narrow, where more can be packed. Our watermelons have lost their varieties that were large, round, thin rinds and extremely juicy. You can say, in a way, the taro protested against all these and refused to succumb. Perhaps that is why I like it so much. Before I jump into the promised recipe or two involving the different parts of the taro plant, let me voice two words of caution. If you have a renal condition or ever had any issue with your kidney, be very careful on how much and how often you eat this vegetable, such as taro and large yam, or leafy greens such as oxalis or chicken spinach in your diet. Also, make sure whenever you eat, you cook them first, no eating raw. Raw oxalis as garnish for soup and food may be okay. You see what works for you. The other word of caution, which perhaps in ancient days, which is when the tradition of eating taro as one of the first green in the season had started, did not have to worry. It is about pollution. Taro has the habit of bioaccumulating and drawing the pollutants such as heavy metals and holding them in its body. Scientists have used and explored using taro to remove the pollutants, which in this way, by growing them in polluted water. There is one particular study I came across in India, compared the wild growing taro around the highways as opposed to those standing in the fields around the ponds and the ditches. It has clearly showed that those that are near the highway were accumulating pollutants. So sourcing your taro becomes an important task. It goes back to the need of the day to localize your sources of vegetables and grains as much as possible. Know the farm or the farms where your food is coming from. Try to grow some in your yard or balcony in your community and share and exchange. What a wonderful idea, right? We do that, some of that, in Oroville, but the message needs to spread. Okay, I give you two recipes. One quite common, that is with the cormlet or arbi, as it's called Hindi belt, and the other not quite common but very popular in eastern India, that is with the leaf stalk or the petioles. So here comes the recipes. Recipe number one, which is with the cormlet or the arbi as a side dish. Take 7 to 10 taro cormlet, wash them well, boil, and then take off the skin. 2 tablespoons of oil or ghee, and then add half, put it in a, wok or something. Put a half a teaspoon of carom seeds. Carom seeds is called ajwain. 1/4 teaspoon of cumin seeds, add a pinch of asafoetida, a couple of slid green chilies. You can reduce that if you want. To this, add 1/4 teaspoon each of turmeric, red chilies, and 1 tablespoon of coriander powder, salt to taste, 1/2 cup of water, fold it in with the taro now, and 1/2 teaspoon of dried mango powder. Stir it for 8 to 10 minutes and adjust the taste. You're done. You can garnish with a little cilantro and voila. The next one is actually a recipe from the eastern India. It is with the leaf stem or the petioles. In Bengali, it is called kochu shag. In kochu shag or the yam stem. Even though the word shag usually refers to the leaf, in this case, it's not the leaf. So take kochu shag. You need quite a bit actually because it cooks down. And it needs to be washed very well and peeled. Then boiled with a little bit of salt and water. Drain the water out and mash it up. Take black chickpeas and 1/2 cup of it, soaked overnight, boiled with a pinch of salt, set aside. Heat the pan with 3 tablespoons of mustard oil or ghee and add 1/4 teaspoon of black cumin seeds, 1 dry chili, and add boiled chickpeas and slitted green chilies, 4 to 5. If you are not so adventurous, you can reduce. Fry about a minute in the medium flame. Add the boiled yam stem, 1/4 teaspoon of turmeric powder, 1/4 teaspoon of salt, 1/2 teaspoon of sugar, and mix it well. Fry it in the medium flame for another 10 minutes. Now, taste for the salt and sugar. Add more or less according to your taste. And finally, fry it for 5 more minutes. The recipe is absolutely ready. Serve it hot with the steamed rice. You can see a picture of both this recipe, how it would, the final product would look, in the podcast when it is posted. So you can try it out and get a good source of kochu shag or the leaf stem. Mind you, it is not the leaves of the plant, but just the stems. Let me know how that goes. Arbi or the cormlets, if you're unfamiliar with it, try it out. It is a very easily available vegetable in Oroville, in Porthoos, and in the local grocery store. So with that, I sign off today and see you next week. Stay well and stay safe.
This is Oroville Radio, voices from the city of Dome.